Here we are, Cinema Squabble, episode number 73, spoiler of spoilers. No, this is a...
Spoiler-free because it opens today.
We're avenging the spoilers.
Yes.
How's that?
Non-spoilers, although, I mean, sure. We will have a discussion, so at a certain point...
There may be
stop
something.
Listening at some point.
Or don't.
For a moment.
Yeah.
We'll tell you.
We'll give you a fair, yes. fair warning. Adam Gerke, Sarah Michelle Fetters, that guy, John, Cinema Squabble... What do? We are some of Seattle's film critics. We gather in theaters lately, not as frequently as usual. We have had a fairly anemic run for the last couple of weeks.
And we can blame Avengers. Infinity War yeah, for yeah, that. And yeah. then also just a boatload of, we don't want to screen this in your theater. We're going to send you a screener.
Right.
So there's been a lot of those these last 2 weeks.
So our discussion, our peanut gallery discussion has not been as fervent. It has not been as active as often, however, we're going to bring the discussion to you anyway in podcast form. Specifically, we didn't even talk about who's going to introduce these things. I think we can probably do this round robin style, and we will do just fine.
Two films, I think we can manage.
We've
it.
We've got this made.
We can do it.
I think we can do it. Amy, we are all professionals.
Right. Yeah. Amy Schumer is back with I Feel Pretty.
I Feel Pretty.
What's the
so pretty.
What's the best way to sum this one up? I want to say this is like part Shallow Hal, part
Big. Part 13 going
heavily
on 30.
Heavily influenced Big.
Yeah.
There's even a Zoltar reference in here.
Wow.
So I guess the gist is Amy Schumer, her character.
Also, the Matthew Broderick classic from the 80s. My brain just stopped working.
It's okay. Well, while that functions, we'll set this up in the sense that Amy Schumer, she feels as though she is unpretty. She feels as though maybe she's a basement worker for a cosmetics department, and she wants to kind of make it. She wants to feel like all the pretty models and all the above. Makes a wish. Her wish is granted, but by the way, she slips and falls and hits her head. Mm-hmm. So what this actually gives her is that dose of confidence, which is really more to the point, that she starts leading her life with this confidence and going and doing the things that maybe she was reluctant to do before.
Well, it's because she believes she looks like a supermodel now, but she still looks like Amy Schumer.
Mm-hmm.
That's
the gag.
That is the gag in the movie. Mm-hmm. Everybody else sees her as she really, actually, truly is. She sees herself as somebody completely different because she sees herself as somebody completely different. She has confidence and positivity. What other people see is a person that looks like Amy Schumer who has confidence and positivity. So they accept her and they end up adoring her because she's an everyday normal person who has confidence and positivity and happy with who they are in the world, not knowing she's not actually happy with who she is in the world because she wrongly believes she looks different than she actually does.
Hashtag winning.
Yeah.
So
there
okay.
you go. That was, I have no idea why that was so complicated.
Yeah.
But that's the movie.
But that's where we're left.
Now I know, right?
We had an interesting discussion before we had even seen the film,
mm-hmm.
and that was the discussion of to credit them, Connor and Doug, two good friends of yours,
yes.
were the ones who spurred this on. Said, looking at the slate that was up on the screen before the film, I think it was Connor says to me, he goes, you know, she's got blonde hair, she's got good teeth. She's maybe a size 10.
No, she's like a size 8.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So this is not the poster child for obesity in America.
Yeah.
And by most standards, I would say
it's a very white movie.
Right.
Incredibly white.
And
I don't necessarily have a problem with that per se, especially with what you're trying to do here. And this is a movie that actually means well. It actually has a very positive message at the heart of the film. Mm-hmm. And had it been made 10 years ago, I have a feeling people might have been more willing to accept it.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly what you're saying. Amy Schumer is not a supermodel, mm-hmm. but she is still a very rich, successful Caucasian woman who is a normal human female size.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now she's not the high glam view of beauty, but few people are.
She's not Charlize Theron.
No, and that's fine. But she is still a rich blonde movie star.
Mm-hmm.
The movie doesn't do enough to to make up for that, especially because the movie constantly undercuts its own ideas as to what it's trying to say. And I think that has to go back to screenwriter and directors Abby Cohn and Mark Silverstein. This is their directorial debut. They've written a bunch of films, including Never Been Kissed and How to Be Single. They come in a way from a sitcom friendly background. If you look at the films that they've written, they are very easy. They're very easy to digest, and they're very quick to the gag. And they want to come up with a good idea, but they still want to soft pedal it in a way that makes it almost easier for people to deal with. And they don't want to challenge anybody. Mm-hmm. The problem with this movie is you actually have a challenging idea. Mm-hmm. The concept here is one that is worth discussing, except that the movie keeps, slicing its own feet off whenever it wants to deal with that. And it also doesn't help that it creates a much better secondary character for Michelle Williams as the cosmetics company CEO Avery than it does for its own leading lady.
I don't know if I agree with that entirely. And I will also say that I think that I like where you're going with a lot of this, but and this doesn't save the whole film. There is one pinnacle speech she makes at the end that I think was actually really quite empowering.
The speech is fantastic.
That's the speech we needed to hear, but it needed to have that same feeling kind of throughout somehow building to that.
Well,
I guess.
Here's one of the deals, though.
And by the way, it's a reveal of she realizes, oh my gosh, I wasn't this supermodel. It was me all along.
And that's not a spoiler because that's going to happen.
It's like you could have gone home all along.
But
just
so here's,
click your heels together.
So John, I know that you didn't go see this, and I know you're going to tell us in a second what the reasons were. But the reasons that he's talking about this speech is, and the reason I have a problem with the speech, I think the speech itself is fantastic, and Schumer is great delivering it. Mm-hmm. Michelle Williams plays this character Avery, who is the CEO of the cosmetics company, She basically talks like a stereotypical high-pitched airhead Barbie doll throughout the whole movie, and that's how she sort of carries herself.
Michelle Williams.
Yes.
Yeah.
But she's actually genius. I mean, she knows business. She knows what the customers want. She's very, very good at her job. But nobody takes her seriously because of her voice and because of the way that she presents herself. Because she presents herself in this high gloss, very expensive Barbie doll way. And so a secondary story is her getting her own confidence to be able there and be a good leader. The movie completely destroys that have Amy Schumer make a speech at the end that actually Michelle Williams' character probably should have made, in my opinion.
See, because like the Michelle Williams movie, that sounds like something I would see.
And the Michelle Williams gives one of the best single comedic performances of the year so far. And
wow.
It's one of her best performances ever, and she's not been nominated for 4 Academy Awards, but the movie does not use her enough.
I wouldn't say this is her best performance.
Of her best. That's
I don't know. I can think of several others. Like for example, Shame. I like her in Shame a heck of a lot better than I do.
That's not a comedic performance.
Right,
also, but
it is a bit part.
Yeah,
you know.
This is up there though with like Kevin Klein in A Fish Called Wanda. I mean, this is a ferocious supporting comedic performance that steals the movie from everybody else. And I would have loved a movie about her and what she was doing in that company.
Mm-hmm.
I think that could have, because that, the nice thing about that company was that the company was also multicultural. There was a lot of different things going on there.
Yeah.
You could have talked about gender. You could have talked about race. You could have talked about sexism. You could have talked about misogyny. There were so many different things that you could talk about with this character.
I hear a lot of could have.
So,
Could have, but didn't.
Yeah.
So, John, you did not go.
Why?
What was your reasoning on that?
One of the main reasons, other than it looked terrible, and with the amount of movies that we get the amazing opportunity to go and see these days. One of the things that I am learning is that my time is valuable. And
yes, it is.
As opposed to as soon as we get that email responding right away and being like, cool, yes. Being like, okay, let me actually look a little bit into this. Is it going to be worth my time?
Yeah.
Because not only is it going to the movie, then it is processing it, writing notes, doing a podcast about it, all of that. So when I saw this, I was like, no, no. Amy Schumer, when I was looking into this movie, again, you guys already talked about it. She does not adequately represent somebody in that position to be like, oh, look at that troll over there. Mm-hmm. I mean, it reminds me of like the Not Another Teen Movie. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, she has a ponytail and paint-covered overalls.
Yeah.
It's like, come on.
So guess what? And that movie was like, what, 15, 16 years ago at this point? And it was making that joke. That's the point. This movie feels dated, unfortunately. Yeah.
So it was that, and it was just, I'm all about body positivity. I think it is great. But this just, from the get-go, just from the trailer, the promotional material, I was like, this is just not going the direction that I want to spend my time doing.
Sure.
And also, quick disclaimer to all of the listeners, the golden smooth voice that you are used to listening to from that guy named John is not here right now because I lost my voice last weekend covering the Vancouver Webfest. So this is my struggle voice, listeners.
I just pushed your volume up just a little bit too, because otherwise we're completely drowning you out.
Yeah.
That's all right. I can relate. I was coaching 7 softball games this weekend, so I'm struggling too.
Quick aside, the breakthrough moment that I had having that same realization a number of years ago, Mars Needs Moms.
Wow.
So, only I saw it.
Ooh. See, and that's why I can't do that. I feel like I cannot do my job.
Yeah.
As a professional film critic, I cannot do my job unless I give everything the benefit of the doubt. And I will say the trailers for I Feel Pretty were horrible.
Yeah.
The trailers are terrifying. The movie isn't. The movie is just frustrating because it goes from being really good and really smart to being the opposite of that.
Yeah.
And it does it so in such a herky-jerky way, it drives you a little bit nuts because you can see the good movie that's sitting inside of it.
Yeah.
But I always feel like, to me, if I don't give everything a chance, then I'm not going to really have a great idea at the end of the film, at the end of the year, what I actually loved. Now, also, because I work for a newspaper as well as a website, the newspaper assigns me to go see certain films, and I don't have a choice sometimes.
Right. And I respect what you're saying. However, there are a number of films that I think we've both gone into, and we walk in, we kind of like, yeah, we're here. We know how this is going down.
It is part of the job. It is one of the opportunities we are afforded as film critics that we get the chance to see these movies, be they amazing or be they terrible. But it is an opportunity. And so, yes, I have taken that opportunity and seen some movies that I would not have seen otherwise.
Sure.
This one, I just could not do it.
Put it on the pass list.
Yeah, I get it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I guess I would say if you have nothing to do during an afternoon sometime later this year, just see what it's like sitting on your couch and just give it a shot.
So you're saying that is for I Feel Pretty.
Yeah.
And so does that fall into the rental category or is that
No, it's a rent. I mean, especially because of Michelle Williams. Michelle Williams' brilliance makes the movie worth seeing, but not in a theater.
Yeah.
You need to just rent it.
Okay. And I would put it in that rental category as well. I didn't think it was show-stopping. I didn't think it was worth the box office dollar. Just, you know, looking at pure monetization of how much do I want to spend for my entertainment.
Right.
I just can't justify
it. I spent the right amount, in my mind. Zero.
Zero.
So there you have it. All right. Talking a little further about the things that I have met more people this week who are hesitant when they're like, you saw Avengers.
Yeah.
I'm like, hey, I did see Avengers.
That's why John is back. Cause you know, he is our resident comic book.
But I've had more people say, you saw Avengers. What do you think? And I'm like, spoilers or not? And every one of them, no spoilers. And at that point, it's usually like they panic and run away where all I'm going to say is, I give it a thumbs up or I give it a thumbs down. As like, you know, I'm not obviously going to destroy the fun for them.
I actually think this one, though, I think Infinity War is actually pretty easy to talk about without revealing too many spoilers. Because
I think you're correct.
But, you know, I think we should leave this one to John to intro because he's the one that told us he was really excited to see it in
by
the last
hook or
show.
By crook, I believe were the exact words.
He was just sitting on pins and needles.
So there we were at the Cinerama by hook or by crook. Everyone made it.
John.
Tell us about this.
So Avengers Infinity War is the culmination of 10 years of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. One of the really clever things that they did right in the beginning is the Marvel Studios logo, if you noticed, was a 10 at the end of it, where the I and the O was. Really clever, smart, just like right off the bat. So this is the culmination of 10 years of the Marvel Cinematic Universe as we know it, including Iron Man, Thor, Avengers, all of these characters. Actually, not all of them.
No, there's some that are some that are absent, and their absence is put down to one line of dialogue, which I thought was interesting. It's like, okay, we're going to explain Hawkeye and Ant-Man not being here in one line.
And at least with those ones, with Ant-Man, his movie comes out in a couple months. So that one is an easy tie-in to be like, cool, at the end of Ant-Man, we'll wrap it up, be like, all right, done. This is it. Hawkeye, on the other hand.
Let's get into this a second. Tell us more about the... just give us the setup for this film.
Yeah, so this film, Thanos, who is the architect behind the attack on New York with Loki and the Chitauri, this is his role. Now that he is, you know, big and bold and back, he has the Infinity Gauntlet, he's collecting all the stones, and he wants to wipe out half of the universe, wipe out the population of half the universe, to balance the scales.
And the Infinity Stones, for folks who are just learning, who haven't been following along in their Marvel encyclopedia knowledge, Infinity Stones, when the universe was created, there were six stones that were kind of shattered and scattered amongst the entire universe.
And those were the little shiny objects that we see in a variety of the movies, like the Tesseract and the Aether.
Loki had one in his scepter, I think, at one point, and Vision has one implanted in his head.
The Soul Stone.
I thought that was the Mind Stone.
That's the Mind Stone.
Yeah, we don't want to talk about the Soul Stone too much.
Doctor Strange has one in his amulet. It's like the Time Stone.
Eye of Agamotto.
Right.
Yes.
So I mean,
this is why we have a comic book person.
These stones exist. Now, there happen to be several on Earth, of all places.
Of course.
But, as it were... So Thanos is working to get his hands on all these stones, because with each stone you wield ungodly power.
Yes.
And theory being, if he gets all of these stones, he could do tremendous damage.
He can pretty much do anything he wants, because he wields essentially all of reality. And in the comic books, I mean, if you want to go back and read Jim Starlin and amazing, amazing art by George Perez, the Infinity Crusade, Infinity Gauntlet, Infinity Quest, I mean, all of those. So once he has the gauntlet, with all of the stones, with a snap of his fingers, half the universe, he has the power to wipe out half of the universe's population.
Sure.
So with that, all of the heroes that we have known over the past 10 years have to band together to stop him from getting all the stones, once he has the stones, from keep him from doing what he inevitably wants to do. So, and what was fascinating about this movie... Because again, we have been building up to this for a while.
18 movies.
18 movies where Thanos first turns around in Avengers in the post-credit scenes.
And he's just smiling.
Smiling, and he was like, fine, I'll do it myself. Me in the theater, freaking out and screaming and poking everybody around me, being like, do you know who that is? Nobody knew who that was. So then I had to go into a diatribe for an hour after the theater, after the movie. So with all of that, the stakes have never been higher, and I was pleasantly surprised of how much damage took place in this movie on a different scale than we are used to. And it was just something that, when the stakes are this high, how are they actually going to show the Avengers and these superheroes in turmoil? And they did. And I think they did a really, really good job at showing how effective a villain like this is, not just from sheer size and strength, but power and intelligence. So that was pretty incredible.
So can I, I'm going to say this movie got two things right that I'm really happy about.
Okay.
The first thing that it got right was that I was really worried with 18 movies, this many characters, and 2.5 hours, that the majority of the running time of this film was going to be, hi, my name's Tony Stark. Hi, my name's Doctor Strange. Hi, my name's Peter Quill. Hi, my name's Spider-Man. Yeah. I thought that we were going to have at least an hour and a half of people introducing themselves to one another.
Right.
Yeah.
Somehow, they managed not to do that. Yeah. There's a little bit of it, but it's handled in a very organic, authentic way.
Absolutely.
The second thing that I think this movie really gets right... This movie isn't about the heroes.
Nope.
It's about Thanos. This is the first time. Now, Black Panther is maybe 40% about the villain.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. Because you had to.
Because you had to.
Yeah.
This movie takes that to another level. This is Thanos's story.
Mm-hmm.
And it, if anything, it's his relationship with Gamora from the Guardians of the Galaxy. They are the crux of what this whole film is about. And it makes it surprisingly emotional because you have an empathetic villain who is horrible. What he wants to do is the worst thing imaginable. And yet you understand him.
Yeah,
and you can relate to him, which makes him more terrifying.
They give him his reason. His raison d'être, his reason to be, actually has some credence to it in a weird way. Like they make it make sense. If you think it through too long, you kind of go, "Wait a minute, that doesn't work." However,
but that's what makes him a villain.
On the surface, it actually kind of makes sense.
Yeah, and I those two things about the movie was really impressed with those two things about the movie.
And I mean, and they did a good thing with the movie. So his reasoning for doing this in the comics was because he had a crush. He had a crush on death.
Jettisoning that for the film was a stroke of genius, in my opinion.
So, because, I mean, in the comics, he had a fascination with the Mistress Death. And so to appease her, basically to give her some flowers, he was like, hey, how about I wipe out half the souls in the universe as a present? I like you.
Huh.
You cannot do the comic book storyline in the Marvel Cinematic Universe as we know it.
No.
Because A, Silver Surfer is not there.
Sure.
Adam Warlock is not there.
He was introduced.
His cocoon was introduced.
I know.
Mephisto is not there, who is a literal devil in the comics. They're not going to introduce him. So with that in mind, you had to construct the Infinity War with what you had.
Sure.
And they did a really good job of weaving storylines from the comics into the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Hulk kind of took the place of Silver Surfer crashing through the Sanctum Sanctorum, being like, Thanos is at the door. Yeah. We got to get ready now.
Yeah.
So they can replace some characters. They can weave those in and out. The average moviegoer, not to say that you are average, Sarah, but thank the you. Average comic book moviegoer, you know, who likes these movies, who enjoys these movies, they're not going to care that that was supposed to be Silver Surfer doing that.
Sure.
As long as they get, and last time I was on here, we talked about it. What I wanted from this movie was a solid story.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted them to lay the groundwork, which they were going to do because we know that there's going to be part two coming out next year.
Right.
I wanted a solid story knowing that it was going to be a lot of setup.
Mm.
This movie, not only did it do a great job of setting things up for part two, but it was also a solid beginning, middle, and end. You might not be happy at that end. Wow.
That's a lot of grunting that is a from lot the corner of over there.
Yeah.
I am the stick in the mud where it comes to these films.
Yeah.
Okay.
So go ahead.
But no.
You said your two things that you enjoyed.
I did. I enjoyed those two things a lot. And I mean, I can come up with some other things that I enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
For me, this is Civil War all over again. In that,
disagree?
So we've just had Guardians of the Galaxy 2, we've had Spider-Man Homecoming, we've had Black Panther, we've had Thor Ragnarok, all of which were films that were set in the same universe, that planted seeds for other films, but that still worked in and of themselves. This is a 2.5 hour commercial for Ant-Man and the Wasp, Captain Marvel, and then the fourth Avengers movie. This movie doesn't exist on its own. You have to have knowledge of the other 18 films. And I'm not saying that's necessarily a totally bad thing because there were a couple little payoffs that happened here, especially one involving Captain America, the First Avenger, that kind of made me giggle and get giddy. And I was very excited to see that one paid off.
I'm trying to think which one. Oh, okay. Yeah. Gotcha. Yep.
Going back to the Soul Stone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was something there that was paid off. And that made me happy.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to have this almost encyclopedic knowledge of the other films to understand a lot of what's going on here. And then at the end, nothing that was here obviously mattered. There's a point where you raise the stakes almost. I mean, they were so intent on having the bodies hit the floor this time.
Mm-hmm. I would sing the song, but my throat hurts so bad.
It's okay.
that they raise the stakes to a point that they're just not believable, because we know a lot of what happens in this film is going to be immediately undone because we know about other films that are already in the pipeline. And so you just don't have that emotional response to the things that transpire that you otherwise should have.
Although I think there are... So there are some things that happen in this film that you kind of just go, yeah, that one seems irreversible.
No, there are two deaths at the beginning of the movie that are completely irreversible. I think those two deaths are going to stand. Mm-hmm. Every other death that happens in this film, I guarantee you, 95% of them are being undone.
That is high.
I think,
but the thing is, what you have to take into consideration is, yes, with the gauntlet, with the stones, you can rewrite reality. You can redo time. You can do all of that. It still did not take away, for me, those moments when the tension was mounting. There is a moment when one of the gems needs to be extracted and is getting extracted. Like, that was
it's a great
tense.
Moment.
That was emotional. And even though, you know, the payoff or kind of what happens with that might not be the resolution you wanted, it was still effective in the moment.
Sure. And there's another great moment with Peter Quill that I think is really well done. But again, I just don't believe that's going to last.
What I will say, I think Alan Silvestri wins the award for creating the score that bridges the gap between all of these films.
Yes.
And gives,
that was incredible.
And gives or gave me on a number of occasions, it was sort of like the armrest grip challenge. I actually got physically involved with this film to the point where I was gripping the side of the seat that I was sitting in, kind of just, I was that tense. The score was working that well on
me. Alan Silvestri has knocked it out of the park now twice this year. I mean, I was not a huge fan of Ready Player One. His score in Ready Player One was outstanding. His score here, the way he weaves in not only his own Avengers theme, but themes from the other films that he didn't compose, but still finds a way to fit them in and make them organic, and then come up with just these really elegant and eloquent musical motifs that fit perfectly for Thanos. Silvestri is having a fantastic year.
Well, that and like one of those moments for me was when they're talking about, okay, where do we take Vision? How do we get, you know, what do we need to do with him? And there's only one place we can do it. And Steve just kind of like looks almost towards the camera, and you hear these drums come in.
No, it was great.
I was done. Like, that was just such an amazing
Can
moment.
I also say, though, that this movie has the Marvel villain problem, and it doesn't have the Marvel villain problem. We've already talked about how amazing Thanos is, because it's basically his movie. And Josh Brolin is terrific as the character. Yep. Oh my gosh, is he terrific. And I gotta, Zoe Saldana.
Tremendous.
She's tremendous in this movie. Yep. But it does have a villain problem in that, in all of his minions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
His minions are not used well at all. They're just really faithless creatures to just be dispensed with at some point. They just, for this cadre of demons who are supposed to be almost as all powerful as he is, they're really ineffectual.
I don't know. Yeah. I thought they actually did have some badassery to them.
They had some moments.
And I don't know what the female one. I don't know what her name was. She was the only one for me that resonated, and only because her final fight between
the Pan's Labyrinthy one.
Proxima Midnight.
Yeah, her final fight between her what's her face from the
Black Widow.
Yeah, and then what's her face from Black Panther?
Okoye.
That fight between the three of them was kick ass.
One of those things, and so yes, I totally agree with you. When you introduce the Black Order, which are recent additions to the Marvel villain pantheon in the recent Infinity storyline, and you have these huge creatures that are incredibly powerful each in their own way, they introduce them in solid ways in the movie, and they each get a moment where you realize just how powerful and just how strong these characters are. But then, yeah, they each get kind of dispatched of in ways when you're like, okay.
Yeah.
So, what?
The wizard.
No, I mean, there's one that takes down Doctor Strange, and the way they dispatch him is, it's just a joke.
But
and it's like, it's a good joke.
But I enjoy
but
the
it's,
joke.
It's still, it's like you're thinking, well, okay, this guy was so powerful. That's really, that's it. Okay. Yeah.
But it's also there is this, the peppering of the Marvel humor that we have come to. Now, we're not talking of the most recent Thor humor that goes into this.
No.
This is a, kind of a fallback more to the other humor there's several different
This was much more humor. This is not, I would not even say subtle. Mm-hmm. It is in your face.
Yeah.
But with Thor is a comedy.
Right. Yeah.
Like that movie, legitimately hilarious.
Well, Ragnarok was a comedy.
Ragnarok, yeah.
Yeah.
This one has those, kind of phase one.
It's the Iron Man-y, witty.
Well, I was going to say that it's interesting because you look at Anthony Russo and Joe Russo, who made the last two Captain America movies, Winter Soldier and Civil War. I mean, those had a few quips, but those were, for the most part, fairly serious films.
Yeah.
I did like the fact that they actually were able to emulate sort of Joss Whedon's comedic style and fit that kind of stuff in a way that doesn't feel just like, oh, we have to have a joke here. I mean, it actually feels organic to who these characters are. They handled that for the most part rather nicely.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that was because, they had Whedon on speed dial or because James Gunn is still around because, he also works in that kind of style pretty well.
But also,
because I noticed James Gunn did get like a credit in the film at the end. So I'm assuming it's more him.
Yeah. Take note, there were 16 writing credits on this thing though. So I mean,
technically only two screenwriters get credited though.
Looking at IMDb, it's like there's two plus 14 others.
Yeah.
I looked at that and I went,
Ghostwriters.
Well, come on. I mean, but that's how many hands in the soup do you want? Here's the other production note that I had. I noticed a lot of handycam in this, meaning a handheld camera, which doesn't always translate well on the big screen when it gets to be action herky jerky. And it is one of those things where it's almost like this film deserves to be seen on the big screen.
Yeah.
However, I have a feeling it may actually play better on a smaller screen where you're not going to get quite
you
as much
focus.
And you're not going to get quite as much nausea watching an entire forest swooshing in front of you.
That, I mean, the action scenes, they're good. I mean, like I said, there's a few of them that I think are amazing.
Yep. Yeah.
But overall, they're just kind of superfluous.
Yeah, I mean, and that was the thing is, like, the best fight choreography in the films, to me, would be Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, totally. We got to see, as a comic book fan, Batroc the Leaper versus Captain America in a movie. I never thought that would happen.
Yeah.
So, legitimate, really good fight choreography. This one, it was really chaotic, especially the handycam stuff. It was right in the middle of the action.
But that's, like we're saying, I mean, the best fighting moments in the movie is when it comes down to one, two, three people.
Yeah.
I mean, when you watch Captain America take on somebody by himself, it's pretty incredible.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But when they start going with the large group stuff, it just kind of becomes
cow hitting page.
Yeah.
So where are you coming in on this overall? John, I'm going to start with you.
Yeah. So with me, as a fan, not just of the comics, of the movies, of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, this is a 100% theater.
Sure.
This is a must-see in the theater.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
And Sarah?
Oh. I'm a rent. I mean, I'm barely a rent.
If I could groan now, I would.
Now, don't get me wrong. I mean, when the next Avengers movie comes out and you get to watch them as a pair, opinion could change a little bit.
Okay.
But I just do not believe the movie works in and of it. I am not a fan of what the MCU has created in that you can't just watch one movie and enjoy it for itself. I don't like that. I don't like that everything is so connected and so beholden to everything else around it that it doesn't work by itself. The movie has tons of awesome elements. I've talked about those.
Mm-hmm.
It does not work as its own self-contained movie, and that is why I have to go with a rent.
Interesting. Okay.
Well, and I'm going to disagree with you on that because often I push the eject in my brain on films, and so I went into this absolute
popcorn.
popcorn face. I went to this absolutely cold. I mean, I remember the storylines roughly around most of these characters, and I know what these characters do. But going into this kind of not with the magnifying glass and the hypervision of somebody who follows comics in general, I still enjoyed it for what it was, and I'm going to say it's a theater for me. So, nice. Two theaters, one rental.
And stick around through the credits because you do have to watch the post-credits scene, although it annoys me too, and we'll talk about that after we're done recording.
Right, and I will say to that end, that post-credits scene, I think for those of us non-comic-y people, a lot of us left scratching our head going,
yeah,
what did that mean? Again, yeah. But John, the people such as yourself, you're going to go, ooh!
So, pretty much.
Yeah. Yep.
And I mean, and there were a couple moments in this one, oddly enough, did not have a ton of Easter eggs in it.
Right.
Mainly because they were not focusing on that.
Nope. Yeah.
They were just like, here's the movie. There was a cool one. So Stormbreaker is mentioned and becomes part of the movie. That was cool, except as soon as I did that, I nudged my friend. I was like, that was actually Beta Ray Bill's hammer, not Thor's. But yeah, so like, again, things like that are what make me happy.
Peter Stormbreaker.
I was going to say, one of the best roles for Peter Dinklage.
Peter Dinklage's cameo is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you'll know it when you see it is the best way we can probably say that. Translations Film Festival. That's the 13th Seattle Transgender Film Festival, May 3rd through the 12th. We got Sam Berliner standing by. Sam, welcome to Cinema Squabble.
Thank you for having me again.
This is the third appearance we've had of you over the years. And is this your third year programming, or have you done the, I can't recall.
No. This is my sixth year programming.
Yes!
So it's the 13th annual festival.
So this is clearly not your first rodeo.
No.
And we're not jinxing it. You're going with the big 13.
Yeah. In fact, it's our theme for this year. It's a baker's dozen. That's why we have
wondering
donuts.
About that.
For
the donuts.
You know,
I was actually just talking with somebody who was saying to me, you know, Seattle has a lot of really great options for donuts now. And I said, yeah, you think so? And I'm pleased to see that you feature them here on the program, program cover.
We do.
So tell us a little bit about the festival.
Yeah. So like I said, that's our 13th year for the festival. This is our second year being the largest transgender film festival in the whole world, which is always very exciting. And this year we have actually a bunch of new stuff that we haven't done before. One that I'm most excited about is our collaboration with Velocity Dance Center. Mm. We're bringing the show The Missing Generation, and it's coming from San Francisco, and it's by Sean Dorsey Dance. And I'm a filmmaker. You all are filmmakers. Mm-hmm. Dance makes me feel awkward. I don't dance. I don't know how to move my body. But with Sean Dorsey, when my friend brought me to one of his shows years ago, it took me 5 minutes to get like the giggles out. And then I was like, oh my God, this is awesome.
Right.
So I've been trying to get Sean Dorsey to come to Translations since I started. And so he finally is coming with this particular show. And what he does is he goes around and he collects audio interviews from people all over the country. And then he cuts them together, or maybe his editor cuts them together into a sound bed with original music. And then he choreographs to that. And so this one is called The Missing Generation. And it is about the long-term survivors of the early AIDS epidemic. And it packs a powerful punch. We recommend people bring tissues, but it's super beautiful.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. And this go ahead, Sarah.
Oh, but you do have your Terrified Dance class for beginners.
Absolutely. So they're also, good call. They're also offering two workshops for the community in addition to the dances.
Now, I want to point out, you say you're involving the Velocity Dance Center. That is one of seven venues that you are bringing the Translations Film Festival to.
Yeah, let's.
That is ambitious.
I know.
Congratulations.
And let's go backwards here a little bit. I helped program the very first Translations Film Festival. It was six films at the Northwest Film Forum over 2 days.
Right.
What the hell?
Sam! So we're going May 3rd through the 12th.
Yes.
Seven venues. Velocity Dance Center included in this. Yep. What are some of the other features that have your, just like, are peaking your radar? You're like, oh my gosh, I never would have thought, or so
totally.
On.
So we have our opening night film. It's called Man Made. It's a feature-length documentary by trans director T. Cooper. Mm-hmm. And we are the third screening of it ever in the world. So that's kind of awesome. It's brand new. It just premiered in Atlanta, where it won a big audience award, or jury award. And it is a documentary about F2M bodybuilders. And the thing about it that I think is so amazing and special is that it talks about, what does it mean to be a man? You're building your body, but it kind of like pulls apart, what does that even mean?
Sure.
And then goes into the lives of the different people who are in it, covering the broadest range of topics all in one movie. It kind of blows my mind. So it has to do with homelessness. It has to do with adoption. It has to do with transitioning and what your partner's feeling about it. It has to do with all these different issues in one movie. It's so good.
And can I just say that they have a movie about bodybuilders that they're going to have an after party with donuts and hot chocolate?
Yeah, so clearly I made the party because I like those things and I'm not a bodybuilder.
But you're not far off because I do know a few bodybuilders, and what they do leading up to like their performances or their shows is, so they'll eat super healthy leading up to, mm-hmm. you know, maybe 2 weeks before their actual, I'll call it a performance. It's a show or a contest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then they switch to basically nothing that has water, like no fruits and vegetables. They start eating really garbage. And what it does is it tightens up their skin. And so that when they go and flex, they look more defined.
Vascularity.
And you can see
all,
yeah.
So that's what we're going with the audience afterwards. Everybody is going to be nice
here's
and
where, but here's where this
toned
goes,
and tense.
What happens
and
is when they get to the actual competition, they are usually so drained. Oh. There's a room set up with donuts and cake and all sorts of things that are just high sugar because
what?
they need that energy to get through their performance. And usually at that point, like they do their performance, they do their flexes and their skin is super tight and they're all, yeah. And then they get out and they practically collapse.
Whoa.
It's one of the most unhealthy things for something that looks so healthy.
Wow.
So you're right on for the weightlifters, the bodybuilders to have
right.
the donuts involved. They will have a different understanding of it.
And we like to think that Sam knew this.
Yeah.
I did.
Of course.
Okay. I knew this.
All right.
Yeah. And also my last name means donut.
Oh, well,
so
see, it's perfect.
Absolutely
perfect. Yeah. Perfect. Yeah.
So that's the other reason why, you nice. Know. Get that in there.
So what else are we looking forward to this year?
So we actually have a lot of guests coming to the festival this
Yay.
Year, which is super exciting. And two of them that I wanted to mention are coming with the film I Am They.
Huh.
It's a brand new, it's a world premiere feature-length documentary from the UK/Iceland. And two of the subjects, and one of whom is the director and one is the producer, Fox and Owl, will be here in person. And it's a documentary about non-binary identity and navigating the world. And they're two really charismatic individuals, and I'm super excited that they're going to be here.
I would have never guessed with names like Fox and Owl.
Isn't it awesome? I love
awesome.
Their names.
Sam, what is the criteria for the films that get picked to be in the Translation Film Festival?
The criteria for the films is the main thing is that it is appropriate for transgender audiences.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, stories that resonate with people who are trans or gender nonconforming or gender queer, non-binary in any way. And then also films that reach people who want to be good allies, who want to learn and be educated. That's kind of where we draw the line.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of films out there with gender variant characters that aren't portrayed in ways that we would like to put in front of our audiences. And the big thing for me is I feel a really big responsibility because we're asking people from this marginalized community to come out and see stuff. And I want people to feel good.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the criteria, is that it leaves them feeling good and can educate other people too.
Thus, now I know why I always got shut down when I wanted to do an archival showing of Dressed to Kill or Sleepaway Camp and have like a discussion afterwards.
Well, maybe we could do that within the context of that. But generally, we want people to know what they're in for. That's the goal. The
yeah.
goal is to see yourself represented on screen, mm-hmm. And feel empowered by that.
What do you think? I mean, you know, the big debate that's been happening right now has been about transgender actors portraying these roles. And I mean, what's great with translations is that, especially now that I have this experience with you, you and I have talked a lot and I've helped with the film festival a lot. This hasn't always been a problem so much with this festival because that's what we want. We want to see these actors in
right.
these films or, you know, these subjects. But now we're seeing sort of a backlash against theatrical release films that do not contain trans actors and trans roles. What do you think of that?
Well, I think it's complicated. And as someone who doesn't actively make films that get shown in the mainstream, it's not exactly my place to say. But my feeling about it is that if possible, it would be ideal if people could be trans who play trans characters. The thing that's complicated about it to me is that I fear that people who watch those portrayals will get the wrong idea about what transgender means. If they know that the person who's playing the character is cisgender and just playing a role, I would fear that they would take that and put it onto transgender people who they come into contact with in their lives. And that's not true. It's not a cisgender person pretending to be the other gender. They feel that way and they are trans. So I worry about the implications that that would have for the way that people in mainstream society would see trans people.
So, yeah, that is solid.
Yeah.
Getting back to the festival for a second, how many films overall are we showing this time?
We have 14 feature films and 2 shorts programs. And before every single feature, we have at least 1 short. I try to get in as many as I can.
Wow. Okay, so more information, folks want to get tickets, they can find it at translationfilmfest.org. Are there any other spots that folks should be hitting up or looking for tickets and information?
Yeah, so you can find us on Facebook. Just search for Translations Film Festival or $3 Bill Cinema, and those will connect you to our event page for it. You can also find us on Instagram. We're at $3 Bill Cine. It's 3 the number. and it's translationsfilmfest.org.
Well, and do you have, I mean, the last couple of years we've been able to have sort of programs throughout the year. Are you still going to be doing that this year as well? Do you have plans to have like little mini showcases throughout the year, or is that sort of a work in progress right now?
Yeah. So we've been doing this thing called $3 Bill Wednesdays.
Yep.
And so the $3 Bill Wednesday that actually is at the same time as the festival, we're going to be showing a film that has trans content, and we'll try to get our folks who come to our monthly screenings to come to more of the festival too. I'm also super excited because the festival is primarily over 2 weekends, but in the weeknights in between, we have all these really fun events that we haven't had before. And so one of them is an all bodies, all genders swim at Rainier Beach Pool. And we're working with the folks who actually put that on, and or it's a $5 donation at the door, but no one turned away for lack of funds, and come and hang out and enjoy the water and not worry about anything.
I gotta say, I love that this year there's a goal to sort of challenge perception, if you will. I mean, as we talked about with you dancing, I mean, a lot of trans people are scared to dance.
Totally.
A lot of transgender people are freakishly frightened to get into the water.
Oh, of course.
And I think this kind of stuff is just spectacular. So thank you for doing this
year. Of course. I'm happy to. We also have a speed friending event at the Seattle Public Library University branch.
I saw that and I was going to ask about that. So yeah, can you
how does that work? You got to tell us how that's going to work.
So my friend Micah made it up, and basically they did it last year during Twist. At least I think so. Anyway, they did it last year and it's really the same thing as speed dating with lower stakes, and therefore you're more comfortable. And if you happen to meet someone you want to go on a date with, great, go ahead. But just the fact that it's like friends just makes it way more comfortable.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Speed friending. 14 films, 7 venues, all kinds of activities. Sam Berliner.
Donuts.
Donuts.
Donuts included.
Yeah.
The website, again, is Translations Film Festival. Thank you so much for stopping by. That's translationsfilmfest.org is the website. Sam Berliner, thank you so much for just stopping by.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. You guys are great.
Thanks again, Sam, to stopping by to tell us a little bit about the Translations Film Festival 13th Seattle Transgender Film Festival.
Adam, can I just say how much I love this festival? I mean, I know I mentioned it when we were interviewing Sam, but you know, I helped program that from the beginning to see it here in year 13.
It is a teenager.
Did you ever think it would get this far?
I never thought it would get this big. I thought it was going to last because Seattle is very, we're such a film going city, and we just love, we love going to the cinema, and I figured it was going to last. I never imagined it was going to get this big. And so it just fills my heart with joy to see people embrace it like this.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Super cool. So in quick review, Avengers Infinity War getting 2 theater recommendations and a rental recommendation. I feel pretty getting 2 rental recommendations.
And a skip.
And a skip from John. Yes.
An unseen skip.
Unseen skip. Okay. Sarah, you working on any other projects right now?
Hey, so Crypticon is next weekend, and I will be a panelist this year at Crypticon. So I will be there on Friday and on Saturday in about 5 different panels talking about various things, including transgender representation in horror films and also allyship in horror films. And the big news for the festival, I think, this year is that Barbara Crampton is going to be there, and I'm looking forward to that. I'm going to totally be over at the DoubleTree listening to that interview because I love me some Barbara Crampton. I also interviewed Sebastian Lelio today, who just won the Oscar for A Fantastic Woman about his new movie, Disobedience, and I'll have that up on Movie Freak in a couple weeks.
Excellent. John, you were just on the road.
I was, hence why I did not have a voice. I was covering the Vancouver Web Fest. That episode of mine, About to Review, is available. So abouttoreview.com. Coming up, the 50-hour slam, which is a 50-hour film competition in Spokane, I will be covering that. I also interviewed Sebastian DeLeo for my podcast About to Review, which comes out every Wednesday. So yeah, that is what is going on in my neck of the woods.
A full plate indeed.
Very much so.
Wow. Yeah. So, Cinema Squabble, so episode number 73. Adam Gerke, Sarah Michelle Fetters, That Guy John from About to Review. Thank you so much for joining us, and thanks much to Sprint's Arbogast, our producer.